Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Dumbledore's Big Plan.
Oh man, it's a special episode!
That's right, we are in between books right now. So as ever, we are breaking down how Dumbledore's Big Plan applied to the book we just finished, and today we'll be talking about Chamber of Secrets.
I know, yeah, this is gonna be really fun because it's like it's really interesting. Like, this is like one of the theories that has almost become like a fundamental part of how, at the very least, you and I interpret this story.
Yeah, like it's like it is, it feels like there's so much evidence for it existing that it is part of the story.
Yeah.
Like, which is to say, like, I don't even know if it's like necessarily a theory as much, like maybe like calling it a theory like encapsulates it all into like its own sort of like sidebar thing.
Sure.
But like it's like whether or not you think Dumbledore intended Harry to go through the obstacles, or he set up the obstacles and Harry just did them.
In year one.
In year one. Like, yeah. That's sort of the delineation there. And then it's like, in what things is Dumbledore doing to prepare Harry versus like in a purposeful way versus in a reactionary way.
Right, right. Which, yeah. Which I think is the thing that I like about Dumbledore's Big Plan is that oftentimes the story will contain elements where you're like, surely Dumbledore wouldn't permit this to happen. Like, surely he wouldn't hire Lockhart or Umbridge knowing they're going to be the kinds of teachers that they're going to be, and yet he does. And so it's interesting, but then very often, like when we're like going through and really dissecting the story the way that we do, it can sometimes feel like, well, if you add this interpretation to the lens, it's like, no, those things do make sense because they are contributing to like who Harry ultimately becomes. And because Dumbledore is so often described as this like omniscient sort of character that does seem to have his finger on the pulse for just about everything going
right
on inside of the castle or out, you know, it's just, you're like, okay, maybe he is pulling strings. Like, maybe Dumbledore does have a plan because he as a singular person knows the full contents of the prophecy.
That's really what it comes down to. So really, like, without a doubt, he's pulling some strings. So I think the fun part of Dumbledore's Big Plan is figuring out which strings is he pulling and which strings is he like reacting to. Like, what did he have a hand in? And
yeah.
What did he not? Because you're right, he's presented as this like all-knowing character sometimes, right. And it's like, like, how could he know? And it's like, well, but he knew that, so maybe he could have known this. And it's like, where are the lines between what he did know and what he affected and what just happened?
So I think that's a great jumping off point, too, as we dive into Chamber of Secrets. Sort of like, if we want to almost, like, you, the listener at home, have just watched us conclude Chamber. But if we want to give, like, a little bit of, like, a refresher from Sorcerer's Stone without going through, like, all of the nitty-gritty details of it, I think one of the most vital details is where Dumbledore will be picking up in Chamber of Secrets, whereas where he was starting in the first installment in the series with Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone. Because after the attack on the Potters, like, the wizarding world has gone into a state, you know, in their mind of celebration, of peacetime.
Right.
So the downfall of what has otherwise been this, like, massively dangerous and oppressive force that has existed and caused danger to their everyday lives. And people are excited to go back to normal. But Dumbledore, in a small handful of, like, you know, it seems like Hagrid as well is sort of, like, dialed in, like, you know, like, Hagrid has that line in The Leaky Cauldron where he's like, Codswallop, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, think he's out there biding his time.
Biding his time.
And of course, Hagrid is right. And the reason probably Hagrid has this take, I have to assume, is in part due to his closeness to Dumbledore.
Right.
Who also, I think, knows that, like, the night of the attack on the Potters and Harry's victory, you know, over Voldemort inside of that moment is not the end all be all. Like,
right. Like, it's not that this isn't the end, because, again, Dumbledore knows the prophecy.
Right. So I think, you know, because Dumbledore also knows that Harry is protected while he's at the Dursleys, I think it's probably not difficult for him to surmise that going into Harry's first year, exiting the safety that he has through the protective enchantments at that household,
yeah,
that, like, almost certainly is going to be the catalyst for Voldemort's return. And he is correct. So even going into, like, Harry's introduction to that world on day one, on his birthday, when Hagrid comes and collects him, is the day that the Philosopher's Stone has already gone into motion from the hands of Nicholas Flamel,
right,
to the vault at Gringotts.
I guess it's been in the vault for a while, presumably.
Yeah. That's like one of those things, I guess. Do we ever officially know?
I guess we don't know how long it's been there.
Okay.
We know that Flamel used to keep it at his home.
Right, at least through Crimes of Grindelwald.
Right, you know, yeah.
Like, that
was a while ago.
We can physically see it in his home in Crimes of Grindelwald. But that to me states, like, you know, on the offset, Dumbledore is like, okay, the most obvious, the easiest way for him to come back is going to be via this singular magical artifact.
Right.
The Philosopher's Stone. And so it's like, Dumbledore knows what needs protecting, and he's taking actions to do that. And he knows that Harry's arrival at school is going to be the start. And so it's kind of like, and he must presume.
But he makes sure that Harry is there for it being removed.
He is, yes, yeah. He is aware of that. So, like, Harry is able to start to get, like, some of the breadcrumbs, like, piece together, like, the greater narrative,
yeah,
of what's going to be at stake. But from there, it almost does seem like all of the, you know, obstacle courses that he goes through, like, they're all perfectly fit to each of Harry's respective friends. So it does seem like, in a lot of ways, like, you know, everything Dumbledore has laid out for him going into this first year is with the intention of letting Harry face down whatever remains of Voldemort. Like, the Philosopher's Stone is the fishing lure. Voldemort is the fish, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it bites right where Dumbledore thinks it's going to.
Yes.
And so he's able to, you know, permit Harry the opportunity to take that chance, to give it his go. And Harry himself recognizes this particular fact.
Yeah.
So then with that groundwork laid, coming into Chamber of Secrets, now is when maybe, like, a little bit more of, like, the mystery could be involved. Because if Dumbledore knew the Philosopher's Stone is where Voldemort would go first and when he would go first, it put Dumbledore in a really prime position to steer the ship.
Right.
You know, but now going into Chamber of Secrets, it's like, now we're not sure what he would target next or how he could target it next. And to be fair, I guess on some level, Voldemort himself is not even necessarily involved in Lucius Malfoy's decision,
right, like,
plant the diary.
Yeah, he, like, is the antagonist at the end of the day, but not by design.
Not by design.
Right. And so it's like, what you have to think about going into this year is, like, what Dumbledore, like, did not intend for the Chamber of Secrets to be opened. Like, he wasn't like, okay, this is going to be a tricky year because the chamber is likely to be open this year, and so I'll have to work Harry's education in defeating Voldemort into that. Like, he has no idea any of that's going to happen.
Correct.
So, like, going into the year, though, it's not that he doesn't have plans for Harry. Like, he does have things he wants Harry to learn by the end of the year.
Yes, and he has clearly taken obvious steps before even the start.
Pretty obvious steps.
Before even the start of the school year to enact those particular plans. So the basilisk, the chamber, those are wrenches in his plans.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean the plans.
He has to react to those. But he does. He does well.
He does do
well. I was kind of going back through our notes. There are three big things Dumbledore is trying to get Harry to learn during his second year at Hogwarts. Number one, and this one we've touched on a lot throughout our reading of the book, is just keeping Harry's ego in check.
Yes.
Right. That's number one. Number two is to teach him Expelliarmus.
Yep.
And number three is to test Harry's loyalty to Dumbledore himself, to make sure that Harry Potter is loyal to Dumbledore personally more than anybody else.
Right, right. Yep. And that obviously comes through in such massive fashion. We can get into that. Well, let's start with Harry's ego in check, because I know that we have talked about this aspect of it, especially through the lens of the hiring of Gilderoy Lockhart in particular. So Lockhart in so many ways represents everything that is wrong with letting your ego go to your head.
Yes.
You know, and I think that like Dumbledore could easily look at Harry and say, okay, you have entered into the wizarding world pre-famous.
Right.
You have then become a Quidditch star almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Defeated a house troll in rather spectacular fashion, and then once again faced down Voldemort and beat him.
And protected the Sorcerer's Stone.
And then also won the House Cup for Gryffindor all inside of his first year. So there is like distinct possibility, especially if Dumbledore himself also taught James Potter.
Right, because that's the thing. It's like, not only does Harry already have all that going for him, Dumbledore's know James and knew that James, and Sirius for that matter, were very arrogant people.
They were. I mean, they were very talented.
They were. They could back it up.
They could back it up with a lot of skill. But like, it really, like the James and Sirius trajectory is probably not the version of Harry. Like, Harry has some of that inside of him, surely. Like, you know, but like, Harry is much more down to earth. He has a lot more of like Lily's, you know, like friendliness and everything.
Yeah,
else.
Compassion and stuff. And
yeah.
But so what's fun about this one is that like there, you could say like, so he hires Lockhart to make sure Harry doesn't get a big head. And it's like, hey, Lockhart is this like big bumbling buffoon, hilarious character that enters in here. But like the what's fun and like the deep part of this one is like why Dumbledore knows this is such a dangerous path for Harry. And it's because of Dumbledore's own mistakes.
Yes.
At like the same, well, like almost the same point in his life.
Right, right.
Right. Because Dumbledore came into the school not, or I guess somewhat maybe even infamous because of his own dad.
Yeah. So
behavior.
Yeah, Dumbledore basically enters the school, and I believe the attack on Ariana has already happened.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
gone to Azkaban for it.
Because Percival is in Azkaban. Yes.
Right.
And that's like right before Dumbledore gets to school.
Yes. So basically Albus enters and is like, could be a little bit of an outcast just based on reputation alone.
Yes.
But he basically quickly blows past whatever preconceived notions people had about him just due to sheer talent, skill, and ability in the magical realm.
Yes. Yeah. So Dumbledore, then just becomes extremely well-known and talented and famous of his own accord whilst at Hogwarts.
Right.
But and then
winning every award
to the school. Probably playing Quidditch
almost certainly
because it is literally a century before Harry gets there, and that would be the youngest player in a century.
That's another one of those. It's just like, it just feels like headcanon.
It's just there.
He definitely played Quidditch,
right? He did. If someone did it, Dumbledore did everything. If he won everything the school had to offer, that includes the Quidditch World Cup.
The Quidditch Cup.
So there you go, Dumbledore, the seeker from a century before. But then he's got like such a big head on him that he, like, he goes and when he meets Grindelwald, he's just like, yes, you and me, we can take over the world. We can lead the wizards out of hiding. We can do all these terrible things and we can justify them because we're brilliant and smarter than everyone else.
Yes.
And look how great we are. Yep. And Dumbledore, clearly that's a bad thing and it leads to a huge conflict.
Yes.
That is,
yes.
Almost ends in Grindelwald winning and taking over the world, which would have been bad. But so Dumbledore knows firsthand how bad it is, like the ramifications of being like even just the slightest bit arrogant.
Right.
And he like makes it his mission to make sure that Harry never feels arrogant about anything ever.
Yes.
That he will be modest and humble no matter what.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think like you're exactly right. Like, I mean, Dumbledore is the one who like falls victim to it. But then Dumbledore also, because I think that like inside of Chamber of Secrets, there's a really big thing that's unfolding, which is like drawing a lot of the parallels between this like kind of unknown character of Tom Riddle, who's like the dark haired, handsome, talented orphan boy,
right,
who is like finding his way through Hogwarts. And you even have the scene like where you go into like Riddle's diary and you see the conversation between Dumbledore and Tom Riddle, and basically Dumbledore asking him like, is there anything else you think you need to tell me? And Tom Riddle like is like, no, sir. And then like later on in Chamber of Secrets, Harry himself is before Dumbledore,
yeah,
and is having a conversation, and he says, you know, like, is there anything else you would like to tell me? He said gently, anything at all. And Harry responds, no, there isn't anything, Professor. And so it's like,
yeah,
you know, this is another one where it's like those parallels. I mean, Harry can speak to snakes. You know, it's like he could be the second coming of Tom Riddle. I mean, of course, everything he's done before now certainly doesn't point in that particular direction.
It is what's really funny, but this is more of like our third point where Dumbledore's trying to like make sure Harry is loyal to him. But like that scene right there is a great example of how Harry, at least at this point, isn't like like he definitely respects Dumbledore and knows him to be the most powerful wizard, but doesn't have 100% loyalty to him no matter what, because here's Dumbledore asking him a question point blank and Harry is openly lying to him.
You're right.
That's about an important thing, which is so interesting, this scene in particular, because Tom Riddle shows him this scene in order to win Harry's trust in the end.
Yes.
And Dumbledore recognizes after reliving that scene with Tom Riddle and Harry that Harry does not fully trust him yet.
Right.
And so like, what's funny is that what Tom Riddle does is he frames Hagrid, and what Dumbledore does to win Harry's trust back to himself is prove that Hagrid was framed.
Hagrid is really like the fulcrum.
He really to which is.
That, like,
yes.
That trust like pivots. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of wild. So, so I think that's definitely like one of like the really, really big things. But like, you know, I think that this exposure to a character like Lockhart, an exposure to a young Tom Riddle that Harry might be able to relate to more, and then Dumbledore's guidance coming from his own personal experiences, you know, as like a young boy who was talented and popular and arrogant. It's like it's all informing Dumbledore in a very obvious way, like which way to shuffle Harry. So.
Exactly. And if you need like proof that Dumbledore hires Lockhart to like for this purpose, like at the end of the book, the line is, dear me, said Dumbledore, shaking his head, his long silver mustache quivering, impaled upon your own sword, Gilderoy. Which is just that proof that that Dumbledore has known about Lockhart's lies the entire time.
Yes.
So I mean, which is proof that he openly hires a fraud.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not only does he hire a fraud, but Dumbledore actually knows the trick that he's pulling.
Yes.
You know, like he's like, you're using memory charms to take stories from great wizards, which kind of makes sense, because my suspicion is that out there in the real world, these people who are accomplishing great things almost seem like the type of people that are quieter and have more humility themselves about these accomplishments, but could potentially be running in more of the same circles with Dumbledore. So Dumbledore may have like heard the story more like, you know, amongst colleagues.
Oh, that would have been such an interesting twist if like any of the people that Lockhart stole memories from were like ex-order members or something.
Oh, it stands to reason.
I know, because
not?
they're all like these fantastic Defense Against the Dark Arts stories.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they seem like people that Dumbledore would run in circles with.
Right. Oh my gosh. dude, that's got to be something.
Got to be.
Okay, we got to figure out, because he mentions like two or three, like some physical descriptions of them.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
But like, man, who is in the order but then isn't in the order, but like we know isn't confirmed dead?
So you got the order, and then you've also got the, like, again, going back to the Fantastic Beast canon, if we want to count it, is the, like, it's almost like there's the Second Order of the Phoenix, which is what we witnessed during Harry's time. There's the First Order of the Phoenix, which is what James and Lily are a part of, right. And Sirius and all that. And then there's, like, what precedes that.
Right.
Which is, like, the order that includes Nicholas Flamel and... Oh, goodness gracious. Teacher from Ilvermorny. Yeah,
Lilali.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, her.
What is her name?
Chicory is that... Why is that coming to my head? Is that not right at all?
I don't know. Madame Pickery is the president.
Okay. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, well, apologies for not knowing that information off the top of our head. But the point is that Dumbledore seems to have a legion of... like-minded, highly talented, you know, defense against the dark arts wizards who he is communicating with during the era of Grindelwald's reign.
Yeah.
So, you know, whoever these people are who are like achieving these great feats.
Eulalie Hicks. Yeah.
There we go. Wow. Yes. I was definitely going for the Madame Pickery.
Yep. Portrayed by Jessica Williams.
There we go. Nailed it. Mm-hmm. Good times. Yeah. So, but it could be people who may have been member of like that particular behind the scenes group of people.
Yeah.
Because right. That book is emblazoned as well with a phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? You're right. So yeah. So like, he's got and if this isn't the Order of the Phoenix, it's the Association of the Phoenix or whatever.
Yeah. Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. Like what comes before the Order?
Right.
Yeah.
That could definitely be how Dumbledore knows, is that like one of the people Lockhart stole memories from, one of his victims, was Dumbledore's friends.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I mean, because otherwise, how else would Dumbledore know how Gilderoy is pulling these things off?
Like, right.
That to me stands to be the most likely reason, is that Dumbledore just knows the actual people who did it.
Right. Yes. Gosh. What is it with werewolves? Walking with werewolves? Nope, man. Feeling dumb.
I know.
Here we go. Because Dumbledore already would have some sympathy towards werewolves, because he hires Lupin the next year and he's known about him for a long time.
Right. Wandering?
Wanderings with werewolves. Right?
Hang on. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lockhart's books, just to give us like some jumping off points, yeah, if anything stands out. We have Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, mm-hmm, Holiday with Hags, Travels with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wanderings with Werewolves, Year with the Yeti.
Wanderings with Werewolves seems like the one that stands out as the one where Dumbledore would maybe have more of a connection.
It does seem
because
that way.
He seems to like, I think like when Fenrir is up, he mentions is like, oh, I might not have as much of a bad time as if Fenrir was here or something, who likes to play with his food first or something, or...
Well,
and then he knows Lupin.
He knows Lupin, yeah. And it's Dumbledore who is the one who, like, when Lupin is aiming to go to school, Dumbledore is the one who makes the accommodations to make that possible.
Right.
So, clearly, Dumbledore has inroads with, you know, the werewolf population.
Yeah.
In some capacity.
I think we've even talked about this. I think he's the one who allows, like, the werewolf cubs into the forest, right?
Oh, man. I think you had that additional reading.
Yeah, that was a thing, too. So, okay. We're going to have to look more into Wanderings with Werewolves. This feels like this feels ripe for a theory. Like, did Lockhart steal someone's, an order member? Who was the original Wanderer with Werewolf?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because the rest of those, I don't know. There's no mention of like Yetis otherwise.
Not really. I think we see like the one vampire, yeah, at Slughorn's
the
party.
The ghouls in the attic and stuff like that. Banshee, not really a thing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's just like a Boggart form at some point. Yeah, okay. That one stands out the most. Or I guess Travels with Trolls. That could be.
Yeah, that could be it. That'd be another one. I mean, Dumbledore knows where the trolls are to send Hagrid.
Well, those are giants.
Oh, my goodness gracious, man. Okay. backtrack.
Yeah. It'd be fun. You know what would have been a great one is if the Travels of Trolls one was stolen from like Quirrell or something.
Oh my god.
But Quirrell's already dead.
Yeah. That would be a good one.
That'd be a really funny one.
It does seem like that's like one of those areas where it's like Quirrell does have one skill and it is with trolls.
And it is trolls. Yeah. So that'd be funny.
That would be really funny.
But oh well, I guess not. Unless he just doesn't remember, unless he did steal it, and then Quirrell is just like, yeah, whatever.
That actually does make sense because I don't think that Lockhart's memory charm is usually meant to do what it does to himself.
Yeah, for sure. That doesn't like make like a mindless person.
Right.
That could be interesting that like Quirrell just finds himself with the talent with trolls but doesn't remember
why he's good with them. That tracks actually because we know from additional reading on Pottermore that Quirrell was out exploring the world, attempting to make a name for himself.
Mm.
And then he ultimately stumbles into or across paths.
That would be such a funny connection if
Quirrell's the real hero. Quirrell
is the Travel with Trolls hero.
I don't hate it.
That's okay. We're going to look into that. That sounds not impossible. Not impossible.
Okay. Moving on though. So our next key point to examine into is going to be going into year two. Dumbledore has hired Lockhart, which we all know just means it's going to be subjecting the students to essentially a education-free year of Defense Against the Dark Arts because he's just a moron. But there is something important to teach Harry, which is Expelliarmus.
Expelliarmus. This is the other big... So that's the thing. It seems like Dumbledore is like, okay, so we're going to have to... We'll use Lockhart for this, but also Defense Against the Dark Arts is important. Specifically, one main spell I need to make sure Harry knows.
Yes.
And that is the disarming spell. And the sort of proof is that Snape agrees to be the assistant in the dueling club.
Yeah.
To Lockhart.
I think, narrowed in on the belief that I think that Snape is one of the best, if not the best, duelists in the series.
Absolutely.
I think that he is massively, extraordinarily talented in this particular regard. He seems to have like the concept of wandless magic down in a way that is just completely effortless. He can block all of Harry's spells without even like blinking an eye.
Yeah.
Like, so I think the biggest thing that Snape is up against in any situation where he is dueling, even against McGonagall in the end, is that like Snape is not actually against McGonagall. Like he does not
want to. Right, he's not trying to hurt her.
Yes, precisely. So it's like even in that particular duel where she like blasts him through the window, as cool as it is to see McGonagall on full display.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, who I would also bet, you know, is not someone you want to go toe-to-toe with. But I also think like you're not watching Snape in full bore in that capacity.
Right,
so,
like because he's still just trying to like defend himself because he needs to tell Harry about the memories. Like that's all he's trying to do that whole night. And it's like, I just can't get to him. I mean, he's like so close. And there's like this is a cool movie thing. If you like slow it down during the McGonagall Snape duel is when she's shooting spells at him, he deflects the first two and sends one at both of the Karos and knocks them out. Behind
I love that.
Them. It's
I
like,
love that.
It's like you never see it happening. I don't think it happens in the book, but that's a great movie inclusion where it's like Snape does that on purpose.
Right. Yeah. Right. But like, even that would suggest like, we don't take movies as canon, but if you want to, it's like that would display like his sheer level of control over the situation.
Like
it's
his awareness is through the roof.
Yes. Yeah. Like he knows who's in the room, where they are, and where to send the spells. So,
right.
Yeah. So the point is that like Snape could easily be the instructor. Like he would be a great Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher if not for all of the other stuff swirling around.
Right.
Like he could teach them. Yeah, Snape agrees to go in to be Lockhart's assistant, which almost certainly is Dumbledore saying, Snape, we need you to go do this because Harry needs to learn Expelliarmus. Because Expelliarmus is exactly the correct spell for Harry.
Yeah.
For one, it does go on to be his signature spell, so much so that it is actually said out loud in the story by Lupin. Like Harry using Expelliarmus on Stan Shunpike in the Battle of the Seven Potters is what tips off all of the Death Eaters that's the real Harry because he used Harry's signature.
Because no one else would do that.
Right. And then even in the end, in the final duel with Voldemort uses Avada Kedavra and Harry uses Expelliarmus.
Yes. Like that's it's the spell. And it's like, it is great because it is like simultaneously offensive and defensive.
Yes.
And it like ends fights pretty much immediately,
yes,
without anybody getting hurt, which all is also in the name of maintaining Harry's ego. It's like, it maintains the modesty.
It's
like, these are not big flashy wins. You just don't have a wand and I'm not going to hurt you more.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that is all really good. Let's see. Plus, the other thing is that, looking way ahead, is that Dumbledore recognizes the value of having a fully intact soul.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which, if your signature spell, if the spell you go to the most is Expelliarmus, then you're just going to end the fight quickly and never kill anybody.
Right.
Which is so important.
That is going to be very important. Yeah. Because, yeah, like, I think that's like one of the big things that Dumbledore, especially even on like the lightning struck tower with Draco, it's like, Dumbledore's key priority when it comes to Draco's assignment to kill him is to basically protect Draco, who again is trying to kill him, soul.
Yeah.
Because if Draco does commit murder, you know, in that particular location, then he will never be the same ever again.
Right.
Then Draco will go down a path that he just can't necessarily return from.
Right.
And so it's like, this is something that Dumbledore places a huge amount of stock in. And so this being the spell that Harry goes to, that, like, you know, he consistently leans on, and being the one key defense against the dark arts lesson that he has throughout the year, it certainly ends up being a resoundingly important one.
It does. This also, you can see it pay off like pretty quickly too. Like, even as early as the next book, where Harry has sort of internalized this mentality and stops Lupin and Sirius from killing Pettigrew.
Yes.
Which is like a form of mercy. It's just like, nope, don't kill him. Don't kill him. That's not, we shouldn't become murderers.
Right.
You know, there's that. In Order of the Phoenix, Voldemort goes to try and possess Harry and he cannot do it because, as Dumbledore says, Lord Voldemort's soul is maimed and as it is cannot bear close contact with a soul like Harry's. So it's just like, he can't even touch Harry, you know,
right,
because
right.
of this problem.
Because Harry is so pure. But if Harry is less pure, then maybe there's a greater possibility. Like Harry is like so far the exact opposite of Voldemort that it actively prevents Voldemort from being able to possess him.
Right. So, despite Gilderoy Lockhart and his bumbling ways, Dumbledore makes sure that Harry takes away this one key spell.
Yes.
In year two. And that's what he's like planning on, I think, ahead of time. So I'm not sure how they would have, like, the dueling club forms as a result of the attacks happening at the school, but I feel like one way or another, he would have found a way for Lockhart or Snape or someone to teach him Expelliarmus.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, this is, again, it kind of goes back to the thought, like, where Dumbledore may not know, like, again, compared to Sorcerer's Stone, like, he may know that Voldemort is going to go after the stone in particular. Like, that's, again, that is the lure that will draw him to a known location. And it could be the case that coming into this year, Dumbledore doesn't know how Voldemort will most likely strike again, but he might know at some point in time, I will be able to conveniently package this lesson
right
in some way. And I mean, that's me asserting some belief outward into Dumbledore. Like, you know, surely Voldemort's not going to stop, but also worst case scenario, it's a wizard school just having an extracurricular activity where there's no other major attacks. It's just dueling club. Like,
oh yeah, just starting dueling club at all.
Right. It doesn't seem unreasonable.
Right. I mean, he could have just, like, yes, if Lockhart hasn't, you know, suggested the idea, you know, Dumbledore could have been like, Flitwick, we're going to be having dueling club. You'll be hosting that. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Or, I mean, heck, far out shot, Dumbledore could just be like, Gilderoy, I'd like you to teach this class.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't know if you can do it, but
give it a whirly pop.
Give it a whirly pop, exactly. There exactly.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although, to be fair, it's not a concern either, but to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership. Because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Okay, so story time. Since the day that I met my wife, Alice, she has been all about secondhand clothing. So 2 years ago, we decided to take that idea and run with it and open a business called Nude. It's like the past tense of new because it's not really old, but you know, nude. Old is the new nude. You get it. Anyway, we'd both been in business, but she was hung up on how to start selling online. But fortunately, I had experience with Shopify, and to tell you that we got started in no time is a straight up understatement. We were busy being brand new parents to a 6 month old. We both have other jobs. And within 2 weeks of idea conception, we had the website up and running. So if you're on the fence, whether it's in the like launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, even if you do have questions, Shopify's award-winning help is there to help support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/griffin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so then we zero in on kind of the big one, I would say, which is the loyalty aspect.
Yeah.
So as we mentioned, one of the big things that sort of tees this one up is, you know, it really is that conversation between Tom Riddle and Dumbledore, and then that same conversation mirrored by Dumbledore and Harry.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, it's very clear that like in Harry does, like, you know, for plot based purposes, it's hard to argue with a world where it's like if Harry is ever comfortable to go to an adult and just ask them for help, then it usually would solve the plot a lot faster.
Yeah.
But I still think you can interpret it the other way, which is to say that like Harry doesn't trust Dumbledore enough to let him know everything.
Right, that he's hearing the voices in the walls.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think that that's probably something where Dumbledore, who is a Legilimens, it's not just enough for Dumbledore to know what Harry's thinking. Like, he needs the allegiance. He needs Harry to trust him, because at some point in time, Harry might have to go to extraordinary lengths, and that's going to require following a meticulously placed together plan.
Right. And it's like, and especially like, you know, what happens in Deathly Hallows is like Dumbledore's dead. Right. And then all this bad information comes out about him. And Harry is like seriously wondering, like, why on earth am I listening to Dumbledore?
Right.
You know, he pointed me at nothing. And now what do I do?
Right.
And, you know, in the end, he does trust him and it's fine. But it's like for Dumbledore, this is of vital importance because he, one, is the only one who knows the prophecy.
Right.
So he knows that his agenda will not be interrupted or swayed by anything other than kill Voldemort or defeat Voldemort.
Right.
Whereas, and he's also then able to foresee outside forces wanting to win Harry's allegiance, presumably even under the same name of defeating Voldemort.
Right.
But like no other source can possibly know the truth of the situation like Dumbledore does.
Yeah. And I mean, because you're right, like, because inevitably the ministry is going to want to come to Harry and say, like, Harry, you're the one who's going to have to defeat it. Like, you know, will you be on our side? And that is what happens. Like,
yes.
The ministry does come to him. But like Dumbledore has basically devoted his whole entire life to this particular mission. Like, nobody's going to be as vetted as Dumbledore is and as prepared as Dumbledore is,
yeah,
to ultimately take on Voldemort. Because, I mean, this is like what they're up against for all of book 5, which is that Fudge is just, you know, he's unwilling to see reason. So it's like all the time he could be gathering intel or information or putting together a plan. Like all of that during like action time is what needs to be done. Like you need to be laying groundwork for your defense against this inevitable attack that is mounting rather quickly, and Fudge is doing nothing.
He's doing nothing.
Yeah.
Doing nothing. What is it? Let's see. Scrimjower, I think, ultimately ends up saying it best. So year five, Fudge is gone. And he's trying to win Harry over, and he says, "Well, it's clear to me that he's done a very good job on you," said Scrimjower. "Dumbledore's man through and through, aren't you, Potter?" And he says, "Yeah, I am. Glad we straightened that out." Boom. Take that.
Yeah.
So that's it, though. That moment happens because of, like, the work Dumbledore puts in, like, back in, like, Chamber of Secrets.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Because so the big one, it's like, this is one, it's like, you don't know necessarily the Dumbledore plan, like, how am I going to make sure Dumbledore or Harry only trusts me? But it's like, this at some point needs to be part of his plan, and he pounces on the opportunity to, like, really reinforce this lesson.
Yeah, he does. So the setup for it is going to be after Harry has seen inside of Tom Riddle's diary, and they're going down to Hagrid's hut to basically be like, "Yo, Hagrid, what the heck? How come you never told us this story before?" Mm-hmm. And in the process of doing so, Hagrid is being arrested and brought to Azkaban by Fudge and Lucius Malfoy. And then, you know, Dumbledore is also in attendance for this particular conversation. And whilst in there is this kind of like moment in the hut where like nobody else knows that Harry and Ron are hiding underneath the invisibility cloak over in the corner. But Dumbledore clearly is able to read the room.
Right. He knows somehow that Harry and Ron are there.
Yes. He can discover it. So the big line that he says is basically like the oh gosh, where is it? I thought we had it written down here.
"That I will never really be gone. As long as those here are loyal to me."
Yes, you have it.
Right. That's the line. I'm trying to find it word for word.
Okay, so yeah. So the line is going to be, "However," said Dumbledore, speaking very slowly and clearly so that none of them could miss a word, "you will find that I will only truly have left this school when none here are loyal to me. You will also always find that help will always be given at Hogwarts to those who ask for it."
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like the big setup for it, where I think that basically Dumbledore is saying to the room, like, "If you need help, show me loyalty." And, you know, it's like one of those things that it's sort of like very cryptic for just about every single person inside of that hut.
Yes.
Whether their presence is known or not. You know, it's like one of those where I think Fudge is just like, "What is going on?
You're like, who are you talking to?"
Right. Yeah. Yes. You know, which it would be hilarious to be just like a fly on the wall for that particular situation, because I can just imagine Fudge being like, "What?"
Yeah. Like, okay.
But the big thing is, though, is that then, like, when Harry does find himself inside of the Chamber of Secrets, and, you know, Tom Riddle is saying, like, "Dumbledore has been, like, you know, pushed from the castle by the mere memory of me." And, you know, Harry, you know, retorts with, like, "No way."
Yeah. No, he'll never really be gone. Not as long as those who remain who are still loyal to him.
Yes. And then that is what ultimately, you know, summons
Fox to him.
Yeah. Right. Which is good. Like, you know, positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things where it's like, okay, see, there we go. And then when Dumbledore's talking to him after the fact, he says, "You must have shown me great loyalty down there to summon Fox to you." And it's like, see, loyalty to me comes with help. I will be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even like when, like, then Dumbledore quickly has to, like, you know, show, like, the two-way trust there, because he's like, you know, he's got the diary Horcrux, and Harry's like, "Can I give that back to Mr. Malfoy?" And if I was Dumbledore, I'd be like, "I'd really like to look at this a little closer."
You mean this incredibly important, you know, historical dark magical artifact?
Yeah.
"You just want to take it before I've had time to look at it?"
Yep. But instead, Harry, he's like, "Yeah, of course, go ahead and do it." And then Dobby gets set free, and that, you know, has its own, you know, it's like Dumbledore just very much trusts that, like, just let Harry do his thing. Things are going to work out.
I know.
It's going to be a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. Now, that's a kind of another, like, little interesting one that you touched on just there, because this is like one of those things that you and I discussed before we came down to record, and it's the sentiment of Dobby. Because
I know. I remember when we were first writing the script, it was like, is Dumbledore controlling Dobby at all in this book?
Right, because Dobby is doing something rather extraordinary, you know, for his race, which is like, or species, what would be the right term there?
I think both works.
Okay, yeah. Both works.
Yeah.
Dobby, what Dobby is doing is rather extraordinary because house elves do not have the ability to override the commands of their masters. So, like, I mean, and this is on proud display by, if anybody, Harry himself, when Creature shows up at the Dursleys' house and is basically just screaming, like, won't.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dumbledore is like, Harry, give him a command and see if he has to listen to you. And Harry's like, Creature, shut up. And Creature can't speak. So it's like,
right.
Like, it's like one of those things where it's like, Creature doesn't want to follow Harry's commands.
Right.
He is magically,
like, magically bound by the commands.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, so what Dobby is doing, going against, you know, the desires of the Malfoy, like the Malfoys, is he is weaving through the loopholes.
Yeah, he's just loopholing. Yeah.
In order to successfully do it.
Right. Which you also see Creature doing.
Right.
Where it's just like, you know, like Sirius says, get out. And he's like, okay, I guess that means I can leave the house. Like, Creature knows, like, that's not what Sirius means. And he knows that Sirius would not want him to go do these things. But, like, Sirius didn't say that. And he did say, get out. So he, like, provides an opening.
Yeah. So I almost imagine it like a lock, you know, kind of like as you're, like, turning the knob and you're, like, waiting for, like, the click.
Yep.
You know, it's almost like, it's like what Creature was waiting for was like that moment. It's like, you know, and the thing is that if you're kind to these members of your household, then they won't have the desire
to look for
the loopholes. But it seems like their own inner workings and logic are able to find where and when they occur. But the interesting thing about it as it pertains to Dumbledore's big plan is that by the end of the story, it is incredible. I mean, just like with the Lockhart situation where he's like, you know, hoisted upon your own sword. Like Dumbledore knows when he's talking to Lucius, he's basically saying it sure would have been inconvenient for Arthur Weasley's Muggle Protection Act if it turned out that his own daughter was like attacking Muggleborns inside of the school. And he's like, wouldn't that be bad, Lucius?
Wink.
You know, like, so it's another one of those like omniscient moments for Dumbledore where he definitely has a complete grasp on what Lucius was doing.
Right.
He understands his plan. He knows, and he says, you know, like, it would be bad if any more of Tom Riddle's old things found their way into the castle. Like,
right.
You know, he's like, I know you planted it.
Right.
You know, and then that's where Lucius is like, you can't prove it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't matter because I know, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm who you need to worry about. And
right.
So it's like, it doesn't matter if the rest of the world knows. I know.
Right, yeah.
So I know where you stand, Lucius. So the big question there, though, when it pertains to Dobby, is Dobby, from the very beginning of the story, is clearly in the know. He knows that Lucius is planning to plant the diary. So the question would be, if Dumbledore in the end knows that it was Lucius who did this, would Dumbledore have known from the beginning to be working with Dobby in order to try to, you know, air quotes, protect Harry Potter by way of not allowing him return to school? And I think that as much as I desperately love the idea of Dumbledore and Dobby being in cahoots with one another,
right?
I think that this actually speaks even more to the force of good that Dumbledore knows exists out there in the world in the capacity of things like house elves.
Right.
Because this is almost something that like Dumbledore outlines to Harry in King's Cross Station. I think it's like of love, fairy tales, and house elves, you know, Voldemort knows not.
Right.
You know, like these are things he sees so beneath him that he can't understand him. But what Dumbledore knows is that these forces for good that are out there are acting of their own accord. They are acting against
right
the forces of evil.
Yeah, he has like another sentiment too about like, you know, tyrants everywhere. Do you have any idea how much tyrants everywhere fear the people they oppress, that like they know that like one day someone among them must rise up to like challenge them or whatever?
Yes.
And it's like he is trusting that is happening out there. It's like if the Malfoys are being these, you know, tyrant buttheads to, you know, people in general, someone is going to oppose them.
Yes.
And it's like, he's right. It's Dobby.
It's Dobby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazingly Dobby. Like it's part of what I love so much about him as a character is that he is like, going, you know, at great personal risk to try to protect Harry, who is capable of dismantling the very thing that his own, you know, masters like are aiming to achieve.
Yeah.
Because Dobby values what is good,
right,
and what is right. And so it's just, yeah. So Dobby, I don't think, is part of Dumbledore's big plan, but maybe part of Dumbledore's scope and perspective,
yes,
on the world.
Yeah.
It confirms Dumbledore's own, you know, beliefs.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. So, yeah, I don't think Dumbledore sent Dobby to interfere with him at the Dursleys or anything like that.
Maybe if Dumbledore had been involved, the methodology would have been a
scooch cleaner. Like, it feels like he could have gotten a little more he feels like Dumbledore would have been more successful at getting information out of Dobby than Harry was.
Yes, that seems likely.
You know, because
Dumbledore probably would have that he would have his own version of like a calculating mind to try to be able to find the loopholes. But of course, Harry is operating, you know, to no fault of his own, to a certain degree of ignorance, because he doesn't know much about house elves. And later he seems to learn more about how to ask them and how to close some of the loopholes. I think when he's asking Creature to follow
Draco
for him. But that's something I could see Dumbledore having like his mind would probably work very well with a house elf's mind to be able to be like, let me find ways to ask you questions that you will be capable of answering without having to like feel the need to cause harm to yourself.
Because like Harry's even trying to get like information. Like Dobby is like a motivated interrogee. He wants desperately to tell Harry the information. Harry's just not good at phrasing the questions in a way that lets him.
That will permit the answers. Yeah.
What a weird problem.
It was a clue, sir.
A clue. Not before he was called Voldemort. He could be freely named.
Oh,
not no. helpful.
Not helpful, Dobby. Well, helpful. I mean, we couldn't have done it without you in the end. But either way.
Could they? If Dobby hadn't shown up at all, would it have mattered?
It matters in Malfoy Manor.
It matters, I suppose. Yes, it gets. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But does it affect Chamber of Secrets?
Does it affect... Ooh.
Is Dobby pointless in Chamber of Secrets?
Ah, oh, darn it.
Is he Indiana Jones in this? Okay, let's see. We'll run it back here. Harry is in his room when the Masons come over.
Yep.
That dinner just goes according to plan.
Yep.
Also, well, you know what? We can back it up further than that. Harry already would have received letters from Ron and Hermione and Hagrid. And many of those from Ron were asking Harry to come stay.
Right. So there's a good possibility he just would have gone to stay anyway. It would have been the Quidditch World Cup problem where the Dursleys would have been torn between something that would make Harry happy and getting him out of their house.
Except they would, like, presumably Vernon knows the Masons deal is upcoming. And if he has a way to get Harry out of the house altogether, all the better.
Yeah, that's better for him.
Yeah, that's better for him. So I think no Dobby, Harry is out of there, lickety split.
Yep, the twins and Ron don't need to take the flying car.
Ooh, no flying car, though.
No flying car.
No flying car, no Dobby.
Oh,
okay.
Which is kind of an issue for Aragog.
Well.
But we've had this issue before.
Yeah.
Where you run into the issue of, like, if there's no flying car, then they don't take the Ford Anglia to school because they don't need to anyway
doesn't stop them. They just get on the train.
Right.
Dursleys do probably get their vacation home.
They do in Majorca.
In Majorca.
Well, good for them.
Good for them.
Yeah.
How about that? What do you know? That probably works out for them. I guess that's a good thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
They have somewhere to go when Voldemort attacks later.
And then Harry probably just has a really fun summer at the Weasleys.
Yep. Would still probably take the flu powder to Diagon Alley.
I could even just mess up to Nocturne Alley still.
Yeah.
That I could play.
Yep,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
But then he doesn't get blocked at the station. So he just gets on the train, so there's no flying car at all. And then
they don't crash into the Whomping Willow.
They don't crash into the Whomping Willow, so they don't get in trouble. So he doesn't have detention with Lockhart.
Which is where he hears the basilisk.
Which is where he hears the basilisk for the first time, right?
But inevitably, he would hear the basilisk some other time.
Right. That's where it gets tricky, because where he heard it might be around other people then.
Is the night that he hears it with Lockhart the night that Mrs. Norris gets attacked?
No, that's Halloween.
That's Halloween.
That's Halloween. Okay. Yeah, so he's at the feast. He's at the death day party, and they leave, and he hears it.
You're right.
And him and Ron and Hermione run up and find the cat.
So I think he just hears that, and the you know, Mrs. Norris still attacks. Yeah. Although, yeah, no, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think makes sense. Because, yeah, okay.
Okay, so then the next thing is the bludger, right? They're at the Quidditch match.
Right.
And instead of, and he still wins. He still wins doesn't anyway. Have to go to the hospital.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. To me, the big issue would be, like, if the chamber is being opened again, then Hagrid would still be suspected again. And if Harry still ends up with the diary, which doesn't seem unlikely that those order of events would change, then they still have to follow the spiders, which still brings them into Aragog's Glade. And the thing that saves them from Aragog's Glade is the Ford Anglia.
Well, if Harry is not in the hospital wing, does Colin not get attacked? Right, because Colin is sneaking up to the hospital wing to bring him grapes.
Grapes.
Right?
It kills me every time.
Why is it grapes? What are you doing, Colin?
The man loves grapes.
Man loves grapes, you know? Pictures and grapes.
Yeah.
let's see. Maybe that happens. But yeah, like, it doesn't stop Hagrid from getting arrested. And it doesn't stop Ginny from getting the diary.
Mm-hmm.
So... God, the main thing that Dobby ends up affecting is that the car ends up in the forest.
I think that's the main thing.
That's the main thing, which is not something he's even trying to do or related to.
Yeah. You're right. So Dobby is a little bit pointless, but he is freed.
He does get freed.
He does
because of his own actions. He ultimately gets freed.
Yes.
Yes, which is good. Which then pays off big time, of course, later down the line in like Goblet of Fire and Deathly Hallows and
yes,
stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 Yeah. Dobby ends up being massively important.
Yes.
But he might be irrelevant to Chamber of Secrets.
Right.
Darn.
Clue, sir.
No, it wasn't.
Not a clue.
Oh, man. Okay, well, there you go. That's Chamber of Secrets for you guys. Jay, do you have a review for us?
I sure do, Ben. This one's from Maggie Rose. It says, hey, brother, love listening to this podcast. I also read the HP books the first time when my dad read them to me when I was younger. I've listened to the books many times, but this gives me a whole new way to look at the story. Question, why does the Sword of Gryffindor not disappear after Harry uses it in Chamber of Secrets? If it is appearing to any Gryffindor in need, when and how does it disappear and go to the next one? Also, when was it last used before Harry pulled it out of the hat?
So, okay. Obviously, this is just speaking from the unknowns because we don't have this history lesson. So it's not like the information exists out there. I think you are almost certainly going to be able to guess where I'm going to go with it immediately, which is, I think, most likely the last people to pull it, I think, are Molly's
brothers,
yeah, Fabian and Gideon, which is, the Pruitts. So that's where the F and G comes from in Fred and George later on down the line.
Yeah.
And the big hypothesis there is just essentially that we know that Voldemort was seeking out artifacts from each of the founders. He needs like one more Horcrux to complete his set, and he needs one more founder's object specifically from Gryffindor in order to complete the set, which he intends to do over killing Harry, who is the son of two natural born Gryffindors,
right,
in Godric's Hollow. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like he's in the home of, or he's in the town where Godric Gryffindor is like named for having been from,
right,
you know, and carrying with him what we believe to be is the sword. So the attack on the Pruitts must have involved such a situation that manipulated, I think, by the Death Eaters, such that they were able to pull the sword through an act of valor so that it could then be taken from them in their ultimate defeat, so that Voldemort would have it to create and turn into a Horcrux. Of course, his Death Eaters would have no idea what he needed it for, but they might know how to enact the plan to achieve recovery of it.
Sure.
From there, I guess the really big question, is like, where and when does the sword go when it isn't. And
well, where do vanished objects go?
Into non-being.
Which is to say everywhere.
Yeah.
So if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where I'm like, I think that the Ravenclaw knocker is like, well phrased. And yeah. I'm like, is it?
Is it? Was it?
I need like 30 more minutes to think about that to see if I understand. Yeah. I think it seems like after Harry pulls it, it seems to just reside in Dumbledore's office all the way up until Dumbledore requires its usage to crack open
the ring.
The ring.
I guess the question would be, though, then, so Voldemort brings it to the Potter's house and fails to turn it into a Horcrux. Like, is it just sitting in the rubble until Harry pulls it out of the hat? Or does it vanish between those points?
It's a really good question.
Right.
It's a really good question. So let's think here. Because, I mean, the other thing that I've always loved is our little, like, play on words with the sorting hat, like the sword and hat, because the hat is Godric Gryffindor's hat.
Yeah.
So that does, at least on two key occasions where it is pulled, that is where it is pulled from.
Right, it's from the hat. It occurs to me, so that we've made a video before about how the sword, like, has a master at a time, or like how, like, why Ron has to be the one to
destroy the
locket, because he's the one who saves it. So, like, it occurs to me that, like, you know, Snape or Bellatrix or whoever got the sword from the Pruitts, if that's what happened, like, even Voldemort, he could carry it around. But, like, he could not, like, use it.
I agree
with
that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he could hold it, but if he tried to, like, actually sword somebody with it, like, that might prompt some sort of
disappearance.
Yeah. In which case it were like, return to, like, an origin point or in, you know, the space of vanished objects. Or, I don't know. Maybe, like... Could it be in his grave, you know, with Godric?
Be. Yeah, it could be. It could be. Yeah, I don't hate that explanation, certainly. And I do. I like that thought, because it's like it seems like the magic, you know, is meant to provide someone in particular who needs it under special circumstances. Which, I mean, I think we talked about this possibly in last week's episode, but like when Dumbledore uses it, it's almost like did Dumbledore have to like earn the right to use it to destroy the stone?
Right. And it's like, well, he was in the presence of the ring, so he might have like put the ring on and that could have prompted the need for the sword. And then like even to this end, it's like if it has to be pulled from the hat initially, like it's not even the case. It could already be the case that it is implied that Dumbledore has handled the sword prior to Harry pulling it from the hat. Because without examining it, he already knows it says Godric Gryffindor on it.
Right.
Right. So it is possible that at some point in the past, he has procured it from the hat and then like is the one who gives it to the Pruitts, or it's like just part of the order in some way.
Sure.
And like I don't think Fabian and Gideon necessarily have to pull it from the hat if Dumbledore has already like given it to them.
Okay.
And like now they're in a position where they do need it. Like right. In the same way that like Snape puts the sword in the pool.
Right.
And then that is now the condition for pulling it and becoming the master.
Right.
Right. So like Dumbledore can give it to them, and as long as they need it, it will work. Kind
yes.
of thing.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And we've even gone back all the way to like, you know, the potential battle between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, and you know, the possibility, yeah, that like whenever Dumbledore summoned it himself for the first time.
Oh, that'd be so great if he used it against Grindelwald.
It would be super cool.
That'd be great.
It would be super cool.
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much more I'd like to see with that particular narrative and
storyline. We're never gonna know, Ben.
I know, we're never gonna know. That's okay. That's
Newt
okay.
Give Hagrid Aragog. How did Hagrid help defeat Grindelwald? Did he pull the sword? Did Dumbledore's original wand act as a brother wand to the Elder Wand? So many questions.
There's so many questions, so few answers.
Questions. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's okay, though. I mean, because, you know, it allows us to keep talking about
it. Does Credence live in the Deluminator, you know? Or the Obscurus, or Ariana?
Is Fox the Phoenix that is Wings from the Water.
Yeah. Was that Fox?
Right. What? When does Dumbledore send the Phoenix feathers from Fox to Ollivander to be made into wands?
Because it's got to be before the duel.
It's got to be before the duel. It's got to be before the duel. That's what it comes down to. Maybe Dumbledore thought that the Phoenix feathers were meant for two different wands and was like almost surprised when those like wands didn't come into action. And then it was like, then Tom Riddle got one and it was like, that's weird.
That's weird. Who's it's this like, kid?
Who's this guy?
Right.
The guy went to the orphanage and recruited? He got one?
Wouldn't that be interesting?
What's that?
If he had like, because we don't know, maybe is Fox Credence, you know, could that be a thing?
I think there's a possibility that Fox is Credence.
Right. Me yeah. too. Yeah. Like that the Phoenix Credence has isn't Fox. Right.
What would that mean for the relationship between Dumbledore with Fox and Voldemort with Nagini when Credence and Nagini were
even
like,
that feels like such a good mirror.
It feels like a great mirror.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like
they both found their way back.
They found their way somewhere.
I can see, just like Dumbledore get Fox and he's like, and Credence needs a new wand. So Phoenix came to you. Let's make wands out of these. And then you're right. It's like, oh, that wand didn't choose you. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I guess you can just sell them to whoever, whatever.
Whoever.
Whatever. No big deal.
Tom Riddle, what?
What? That kid? That kid? Oh, man.
No, I could keep an eye on him for like 7 years. Keep an eye on him.
You didn't make it like super creepy looking, did you?
Oh, you
what?
It looks like a bone.
Ollivander.
Oh man, yeah, no, now we're just
in big conjecture territory.
We are indeed. But anyway, guys, I love answering your questions. The community that listens to this show has such phenomenal questions. So as per always, well, not even as per always, but going into next week's episode, we are going to be doing a question and answer where we are going to be tackling just your most burning Harry Potter book questions that you got.
Yes.
So there is a Google form attached to today's episode, whether in the description or in the show notes. Be sure to go in there, drop in your questions. We'll get to as many as we can in next week's episode. It should be so much fun. And then that will be our last episode in between Chamber of Secrets and the start of Prisoner of Azkaban, which you will be hearing from our live show in Boston.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Which if you're listening, as we're recording it, there are still tickets available.
Yes, there are.
For Boston. And Philadelphia. But DC and New York sold out.
Man, so exciting.
I know.
So exciting. It's going to be such a good time. So we are looking forward to seeing everybody in real life. But I think otherwise, until next time.
Yeah, otherwise, until next time, we will see you through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.